Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're plunging into the ocean's hidden molecular world, a place where communication happens on a scale almost too small to imagine.
That's right. For years, so much genetic material was just, well, written off as junk DNA, stuff that didn't code for proteins.
Exactly. But we now know that's far from the truth. Today's deep dive is all about that supposed junk, specifically non-coding RNAs, or ncRNAs. We're focusing on how these tiny molecules, particularly microRNAs, act as messengers between different kingdoms of life.
Uh-huh. Think algae communicating with corals, or even algae influencing the oysters that eat them. It's cross-kingdom regulation.
And our mission today is to unpack how this molecular chatter shapes things like immunity, vital symbiotic relationships, and maybe even how marine life adapts to stresses like climate change.
It's a huge and fascinating area, so where should we start? Maybe with the corals themselves.
Good idea. Let's set the scene with reef-building corals. Organisms like Acropora, Porontes. They build entire ecosystems, but they're stuck in one place.
Right. They're sessile. So when things get tough, like a heat wave hits, they can't just swim away to cooler waters.
They absolutely have to deal with it right there. Which means they must have some really fast-acting internal ways to cope, right? Regulatory mechanisms.
Precisely. And the sources confirm they absolutely do. Corals have the whole sophisticated molecular machinery needed to make and use these regulatory ncRNAs.
You mean things like Dicer and Drosha, the enzymes that process RNAs?
Exactly. Dicer, Drosha, AGO2, peewee proteins, the whole toolkit. They're equipped to generate these small RNAs, load them up, and put them to work regulating their own genes.
So they're ready for molecular level adjustments. What did the research find when comparing different coral species like Acropora pulchra and some Psyllopora?
Ah, that's where it gets really interesting from an evolutionary perspective. They found surprisingly low sequence overlap for many of the miRNAs and the longer non-coding RNAs, the lncRNAs.
Low overlap, meaning the actual RNA sequences are quite different between species.
Yeah, very different in many cases. It points to a high evolutionary turnover. The specific letters in these RNA molecules seem to change relatively quickly over evolutionary time.
But if the sequences are changing so fast, how do they maintain their function? Does the regulation become unstable?
That's the key point. While the sequences change, the jobs they do seem to be conserved. The functions of the genes these ncRNAs target show shared enrichment across species.
Okay, so the targets are similar, even if the specific ncRNA molecule isn't.
Exactly. For instance, in different species, the ncRNAs consistently target genes involved in, say, immune response regulation or signal transduction pathways. The core biological processes being managed remain critical.
That makes sense. Maintaining immunity, handling signals, those are fundamental.
And there's more. They also found that certain ncRNAs, like lncRNAs and piRNAs, are often located physically close to genes involved in maintaining the genome itself. Things like DNA repair, recombination, keeping telomeres stable.
So this regulatory layer isn't just responding to the environment. It's also involved in the basic upkeep of the cell's genetic information.
It seems deeply integrated, yes. It highlights this contrast. Rapid sequence evolution, but conservation of fundamental regulatory roles.
Okay, that provides a great foundation for the coral's own system. Now let's bring in the symbiont. This is the classic example, right? The coral Symbiodiniaceae holobiont.
The algae living inside the coral tissues, a partnership crucial for the coral's energy budget, especially in nutrient-poor tropical waters.
But it's a partnership that can break down, particularly under stress, leading to bleaching.
Correct. And this is where the idea of cross-kingdom communication really comes into play, but perhaps not in the way you'd first expect. The algae, the Symbiodiniaceae, aren't just passive residents.
What do you mean?
Well, the evidence suggests the algae actually use their own miRNAs to actively manipulate the host coral's gene expression.
Wait, the algae sends signals to control the coral. For what purpose?
Essentially for self-defense, to prevent the coral host from rejecting or digesting them when conditions get stressful.
So the guest is telling the host how to behave. How does that work molecularly? How does the algae stop the coral from kicking it out?
It appears to be a really clever targeted strategy hitting two main potential rejection pathways in the host cell.
Okay, what are those pathways?
The first is autophagy. This is where the host cell basically tries to clean house by recycling internal components that can include engulfing and breaking down the symbiont.
The cell tries to eat the algae living inside it.
Pretty much. To start this, specific Symbiodiniaceae miRNAs, like one called Phogomur TSGF7, have been found to target and silence certain host coral genes, specifically RhoGEF genes.
RhoGEF.
Yeah.
What do those genes normally do?
Think of them as an on switch. They activate other proteins called RhoGTPases, which are key players in actually building the autophagosome, the structure that engulfs the material to be recycled.
Ah, so by silencing the RhoGEF on switch.
The algae prevents the activation of those RhoGTPases. No activation, no autophagosome formation around the symbiont. It effectively jams the cell's recycling machinery, at least for the algae.
Wow. That's incredibly specific. A preemptive strike against being eaten. What's the second pathway the algae targets?
The second pathway is apoptosis, or programmed cell death. If the host cell undergoes apoptosis, the symbiont gets expelled.
So the algae needs to prevent the host cell from killing itself off too. How does it manage that?
Here, the symbiont miRNAs seem to target genes involved in the host's NFEB signaling pathway.
NFEB, that's a master regulator, right?
Yeah.
Involved in stress response, inflammation, immunity.
Exactly. It's a major alarm system. By dampening this pathway, the algae might prevent the host cell from getting the full self-destruct signal when stressed.
And are there specific targets identified within that pathway?
Yes. The research points to the inhibition of two key host enzymes, syngazine-1 phosphate lyase, or SPL, and sphingazine-1 phosphate phosphatase, SPPase.
Okay, let's break that down. What do SPL and SPPase do?
They control the balance of two signaling lipids. SPL degrades a molecule called S1P, which generally promotes cell survival. SPPase, on the other hand, helps produce sphingosine, or SEF, which tends to promote apoptosis, cell death.
So S1P is pro-survival, SEF is pro-death.
You got it. By inhibiting both SPL and SPPase, the algal miRNAs achieve two things. They prevent the breakdown of the pro-survival S1P, and they reduce the production of the pro-death SEF.
It's like tilting the scales within the host cell environment, pushing it towards survival and away from rejection.
Precisely. It's a potential mechanism to suppress both major host rejection routes, autophagy, and apoptosis, thereby stabilizing the symbiosis, especially under moderate stress. It's cross-kingdom molecular negotiation or maybe manipulation.
That internal dynamic is just fascinating. Molecular diplomacy, as you said. Now let's shift focus. If that's internal communication within the holobiont, what about external signals moving through the environment or the food chain?
Right. This takes us to a different model system, the pearl oyster, Pinctada fucata martensi, and its food source, a microalga called Nanochloropsis oculata.
So the oyster eats the algae. Standard food chain stuff.
Well, yes, but the discovery here was quite remarkable. The miRNAs from the algae don't just get digested like other nutrients.
They don't. What happens to them?
They actually get absorbed by the oyster, packaged likely within exosomes, these tiny protective vesicles.
Like little molecular delivery packages.
Exactly. These exosomes seem to protect the algal miRNAs through the oyster's digestive system. And then these algal miRNAs end up in the oyster's hemolymph, its blood-like fluid. And crucially, they remain stable and biologically active.
So the oyster eats the algae, and the algae's regulatory molecules start circulating inside the oyster. And they do things.
That's what the evidence strongly suggests. These foreign algal miRNAs, like ones identified as miR-166Y and miR-164, were shown to target and regulate the oyster's own genes.
That's wild. It's like your salad actively reprogramming your metabolism after you eat it. What kind of oyster genes are being targeted by these algal miRNAs? Is it immune defense again?
Interestingly, no. Unlike the coral example, the targets here seem much more focused on fundamental cellular and metabolic processes.
Like what?
Things like endocytosis, which is how cells take things in, autophagy, again, that cellular recycling process, and significantly, the MTOR signaling pathway.
MTOR. That's heavily involved in cell growth, proliferation, sensing nutrient availability, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's a central hub for controlling growth based on resources. Additionally, the algal miRNAs targeted genes involved in making unsaturated fatty acids in the oyster.
Okay, so this isn't about fighting off the host. This seems more like nutritional fine-tuning. The algae is providing information that helps the oyster process nutrients or grow.
That's the interpretation, yeah. It suggests that dietary intake isn't just passive fuel. The regulatory molecules in the food can directly influence the host's metabolism, its growth pathways, its cellular communication.
It provides a way for the oyster to rapidly adjust its physiology based on what it's actually eating.
Exactly. A fast track for adapting its internal state to the available food source. It's another layer of environmental interaction mediated by these tiny RNA molecules moving across kingdoms via diet.
Okay, so we have these two really cool contrasting examples. Internal miRNA exchange, stabilizing the coral symbiosis, potentially defensively, and external miRNA uptake from food, regulating metabolism in the oyster. Let's zoom out. What does all this molecular trafficking really mean for how these organisms survive?
I think it fundamentally highlights the role of these ncRNAs in epigenetic regulation. Remember, epigenetics means changing gene activity without changing the DNA sequence itself.
Right, turning genes up or down in response to signals.
And that's the absolute core of phenotypic plasticity, the ability of an organism to change its trait, its phenotype, in response to the environment quickly.
Which is critical for organisms that can't just move away from trouble, like the corals we started with, or mussels, oysters.
Precisely. If you're sessile or even just living in a highly variable environment, plasticity is key. And ncRNAs provide a rapid mechanism for achieving that plasticity. They're like the fast-acting dimmer switches for genes.
Is there direct evidence linking environmental differences to these ncRNA profiles in wild populations?
Yes, there is. For example, studies on the blue mussel, Mytilus chilensis, from different locations in Chile, places called Cochimó and Yaldad. These sites have distinctly different environmental conditions, like temperature and salinity regimes.
Okay, contrasting environments.
And when they looked at the mussels, they found significantly different patterns of expressed lncRNAs between the two populations.
Different environments, different ncRNA activity.
And importantly, those differentially expressed lncRNAs correlated with genes involved in exactly the kinds of processes you'd expect. Metabolism, immune functions, and pathways related to processing environmental information.
So it strongly suggests these ncRNAs are part of the toolkit these mussels use to adapt locally, to fine-tune their biology to the specific challenges of Cochimó versus Yaldad.
That's the compelling conclusion. It supports the idea that these regulatory RNAs are mediating adaptive differences, allowing populations to thrive in their specific local conditions. It's plasticity in action, potentially driven by these molecules.
It really ties it together. For organisms facing environmental shocks, whether it's heat stress for corals or different water conditions for mussels, these ncRNAs are crucial for that rapid response, for maintaining stability, maybe even for keeping those vital symbiotic partnerships intact.
It's a language of rapid environmental response and internal negotiation written in RNA.
A powerful, subtle language indeed. So recapping, we've seen ncRNAs acting internally in the coral holobiont, potentially as a defense strategy by the symbiont, and we've seen them acting externally, transferred through diet in oysters, regulating metabolism. Two sides of the cross-kingdom communication coin.
And both highlighting the absolutely fundamental role these once-dismissed molecules play in regulating life processes, enabling flexibility and survival.
Which leads us to a final, quite provocative thought for you, our listener, to consider. We've discussed how these ncRNAs enable adaptation and response within a generation that's acclimatization.
Right, an individual organism adjusting to its current conditions.
We also know that ncRNAs can be passed down from parents to offspring. They're found in eggs, they're found in sperm.
Yes. Maternal and paternal transmission is possible.
So could this molecular memory, whether it's gained from internal symbionts or external diet and environment, actually be inherited by the next generation? Could this cross-kingdom or environment-induced RNA profile provide a head start for offspring facing similar conditions?
Are we talking about a potential pathway for transgenerational epigenetic inheritance? A way to pass on adaptive responses without changing the DNA code itself.
Exactly. Could this be a rapid mechanism allowing future generations of corals or mollusks to better cope with ongoing environmental changes, like those driven by climate change? A faster route to adaptation than traditional evolution alone.
That's certainly something to think about. The potential for inherited environmental memory mediated by RNA.
A fascinating possibility.
Oh,
something for you to mull over after this deep dive.